This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. This is Rita Liu. You're listening to Enterprises Tech Thursday. We've got the folks from Digital News Asia joining us. There's two of them, Karamjit Singh and Anusha Kandasivam. Of course, we talk about the tech ecosystem, not just in Malaysia, but across the world. Okay, so we're going to start off with a story from Anu. This is on Tuesday. Axiata Digital announced the extension of its Application Programming Interface, or API, on the Mobile Internet Fulfillment Exchange, or MIFE. MIFE. Platform. So the extension is a collaboration with MDEC via Malaysia Digital Hub, the initiative. So this is good news for startups.
Yeah, it is. So MIFE basically allows startups and corporates, so it's open for corporates as well, to engage with their customers faster, do things like secure payments and things like that. And here's the thing is that they can leverage on Axiata's network of global regional partners. Mm-hmm. So basically, they plug into MIFE. It's a seamless plug-in to multiple countries through one single point of integration. Mm. And they can use all MIFE's APIs. So definitely really good for startups, because otherwise it would be quite difficult for them to get into so many countries at one time.
Okay, correct. So there you go, huge. Across the world.
Yeah. It's in the region. It's in the region.
Yeah. So, okay. The collaboration with MDEC is really great for MIFE, because this gives them access to startups. Because otherwise, Muhammad Khalid Abdullah, the CEO of Axiata Digital, was saying they were having a hard time connecting with startups, because startups didn't really want to work with a huge company, and they were a bit, it's a bit iffy what's going on here. But with
I think the fear also, because big company,
We're going to lose out. So with MDEC, has the resources, the mandate, and the connections to startups. And basically, they make startups feel like, okay, this is something that we should be doing and it's safe for us.
Okay, so for, I guess in the case of startups, the first point of contact would be MDEC. Right? And then from there, they now can plug in into this.
Well, you've got to work with Axiata to plug in. So it's huge savings, time cost, right? Can you imagine if you even want to go to Sri Lanka or Singapore, right? And or Indonesia, because they've got a part in the telco there. Flying there and trying to get the appointment to meet the right people and convincing them that what you want to do has got value to them. Here, just one point of contact, and it's immense. And opening up to the corporates is
incredible. The regulatory framework is taken care of, taken care of for you. So it's very easy. And it's open to corporates as well. So
that's the new twist to this, open up to corporates.
What Kyle said is that right now they're developing a way for the startups and the corporates to put their own APIs on MIFE. So which means that you can now sell your own APIs to everybody. So and the startups can take advantage of all these big technologies that they otherwise couldn't.
So this is Kyril.
Kyril
is the Axiata Digital CEO.
Yes. So he's
I'm sure he's been on the show before.
He's been on the show, and I think also one of the things is he came from the entrepreneurial background before he joined.
I know he was a consultant in Singapore, I think with Bain & Co or somebody, right, for close to a decade or whatever. And then he moved into the Axiata. Actually, he had a marketing role in Axiata first. Then he evolved up or laterally or down. No, I'm not sure. just kidding.
All right. So that's exciting news for startups again.
And enterprises also, traditional companies, right? Yeah. Somebody may listen and say, hey, I've got a product that I think can do well in Nepal, actually. So you go and see the Axiata people and convince them that you can, that they should let you, run your API on the platform. And they, of course, market it in the local. You customize it to local language and voila, you may have, customers from Nepal.
Right. I think
people have to explore this more. Definitely, it opens up markets for you.
Yasmin said something I thought was interesting. I want to get your take.
MDEC Yasmin. Okay.
Yeah, MDEC Yasmin.
Many Yasmins out there. Yeah. MDEC Yasmin CEO. Yeah.
Yes.
We know you're chummy with her. Yes.
I tell you, you all just talk in first names.
So she said that she was talking about ASEAN and the ASEAN market and how we are going, how startups can get into it. And she said that when she talks to people from outside of ASEAN, they say that it's very complex. How are you going to do it? It's not homogeneous at all. But she says that she sees it as having its own flavor. And she said that it is possible to stitch it together. And she says that she thinks Malaysia is the one to do it, to bring ASEAN together. So do you think somebody from ASEAN, something like MIFE, could do that?
But already, MIFE is already a platform to allow you to Singapore, Malaysia, and Indonesia, right? Because you've got telcos in those three places. So, yeah, if I think she, because she sees it, also she's wearing like a government hat, right? So, of course, you want her to speak with that belief that it can be done. And, of course, Malaysia is the place to do it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Nobody has yet come up with an initiative that brings ASEAN on a platform. Like, you know, you may claim it, but then for people to realize that, hey, yeah, you're right. You know, I'm a member of this platform, or I'm utilizing it, and I've actually hit five countries. So the realization of all these claims has yet to be achieved, right? Mm. And that's where, you know, people will, the proof is in the pudding is in the eating or whatever it is, right? So that one, no one has been able to do yet. But yeah, there are various parties that say that they've got the right platform, you know, to do that. So we'll see whether this is true. Your success stories will validate what you're saying.
Okay, so we'll wait for the success stories.
Yes,
now, Karam, you got a story that hasn't even been published. So thank you for breaking the story right here on BFM. You heard it here first. Sunway Group's iLabs is about to change accelerator space in Malaysia and probably Southeast Asia based on your claims. Very bold claims, Karam. There's very interesting things they're doing there. Mm. I actually went in there and said, wow, there are all these things that's happening.
Went in where? You mean in the iLabs?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. How were you accidentally there? You mean
I was there for another meeting.
Your shopping app took you to the wrong place. La.
Why do you assume she was shopping?
Yeah, I had another meeting.
Because she's...
I went down to get coffee and I bumped into this place. Okay, go on, please.
No, so... You have accelerators all over the place, right? So iLabs is actually like an incubator for the Sunway conglomerate, right? And this is a conglomerate in the real sense. You've got 11 different business units. Mm. And many of your listeners will be familiar with some. You throw out education, right? I mean, not throw out.
Education. There's education, there's property.
Healthcare, construction. Yeah, IT also with Chia, you know, the ex-Becom chairman running it. So... they've got 11 verticals, and those verticals all are businesses running well, but they've all got their pain points.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the university there with talent, right? And then you've got the population there too. So he says that, so Matt Van Leeuwen says that, look, you know, any company needs the three M's. Money, you need markets, and then you need, the third M is what? Mentors, he said.
Very good.
Used to work. Don't challenge me live on that, la. You're terrible. La. I feel like I'm being tested every 2 weeks. Man. Anyway, mentors. And so one of the things, conglomerates have, a few have accelerators. And they normally partner with people like Bikesh from iTrain or Andrew Wong from MAD or, you know, the pitching guys who've got their WTF accelerator. Maybe that's not what it's called now, something else. But, you know, pitching Sam and Cashmere, they have an accelerator. So, you partner with them, but Sunway is doing it itself. They told Matt, you know, you're running iLabs, now also run our accelerator for us. And the accelerator is different because I mentioned mentors. Mm. Normally you go in, they pick people, and then you have a class, and everyone, today's class has got, you know, three sessions, and you go and listen to people. And then they assign you. These are the 15 guys who've volunteered to be mentors for our accelerator. Who do you want, you know, and then we'll try to match their time with you. Here, where they're doing is that the mentors, they come and ask you, Frida, Anu, what are your pain points now? Because in the accelerator, it's a 1+5. They say 6 months is 1+5. That also is very unique. But I'll finish this mentor piece first. So they'll ask you, you know, what is your pain point? You say, actually, right now, I think our branding strategy is really weak. So we need a branding strategy to coalesce everything around there, right? And then they say, oh, okay, so this is the person you should meet. He's not in our group of mentors, but we know someone and we'll see whether they're free. If he's not free, maybe she's free. So the idea is they get you mentors based on your needs at that point. So maybe in the fourth month, you want someone, man, we're really struggling with getting our product out to market. Who's a great marketeer for us, who's creative, out of the box? Okay, we got someone for you. So they bring for you based on your needs, which is fantastic, right? They don't try to fit in, okay, these are the people we have, go and find who you want. And, you know, your KPIs, you must have three mentors, you know, before the end of this program. No. So that already is a huge value for you. You dictate who you think needs to help you now, and then they do that for you. But for me, the most exciting thing about this accelerator is that you already got a competition from day one. Because they actually will pick 20 companies, okay, up to 20. And then at the end of 1 month, they will see how far you have sprinted with your product, your idea, and how far you've gotten with your idea at the end of 1 month. At the end of the 1 month, they then will pick up to 10 companies, you know, to stay on for the remaining 5 months of the program. So I've not heard of an accelerator where you come in and you're actually not in yet. You know, you're fighting to stay in. And so, you know, they're going to pick 20 very interesting teams and motivated people. And they're all going to be in a race against each other, you know, to make sure their product shows the most progress at the end of 1 month. Because then Sunway comes and they says, hey, here's 50,000 ringgit. And that 50,000 comes from one of the angel groups out there, which is called Nexia Angels. And I think, Anu, you've met them before,
yeah,
right? Yeah, cool people. And 25,000 from Nexia Angels, 25,000 from Sunway University, you know, not Sunway Corporate. Very interesting. Huh? So you put this 50, so that the 10 startup, up to 10, they say. So they don't say it's going to be 10, they say up to 10. Again, I think they use that word to hedge their bets because they don't want to force to be picked 10. If maybe they only find 7 are really valuable, worthwhile, they'll only pick 7. But then, you know, they're going for quality, right? And they're going to bring a lot to the table. So who doesn't want that? So that makes this a very unique program, I think. And I told Matt when I spoke to him, hey, Matt, you know, you're going to get so many more people wanting to apply to this program. They're going to come from all over the region. So this first batch has opened, you know, those who are listening who are Malaysian entrepreneurs and your friends, you know anyone, you know, you should really try to get into this accelerator. Right. It's going to be cool. And then, you know, Sunway Group, just in the Sunway Township, Matt says that they've got 40,000 or 30,000 students just from Monash and Sunway University. Talk about talent pool, right?
Right.
So it's kind of interesting. And Matt himself is interesting. He's an entrepreneur before. I first met him over a decade ago. He's doing a biotech initiative.
Yeah.
Then he went and joined AIM and he was in Platcom, right? Which is like the national, he's branded itself as the national commercialization agency for the country because they try to pair university research or existing, you know, research or products in universities with industry that needs to plug a gap in their product.
Okay.
So he's very familiar with the pain points there. And he says he's frustrated because universities are all, and I'll make this my last sentence on this and you can ask me questions. Because I remember Chong saying, I just speak without any commas. So anyway, he's frustrated that universities across the world, because he's worked at Cambridge before, so they're all fixated with patents. They think the more patents you apply and you get granted and you have on the shelf, the better for you as a university. Said over 99% of the patents sit there and are never used or commercialized, even in like Stanford or Cambridge.
Right.
So that's why this is very specific. It's market-driven approach. And because now Matt is there and his iLab sits under the Sunway University's provost office, and the provost office is the one that decides who gets their patent application approved, so you can give you money to apply for a patent. He said they become much more strict with that.
Right. So obviously your sentence is a lot of commas.
Is it?
But you're talking about the 5+1. I just wanted to ask,
yes.
What was so unique about the plus one?
Well, because you the plus one, this is the first, it's a 6-month program.
Yeah.
But the first month is your racing to make sure that your idea.
So the, all five, the one is the first.
It's actually the, 1+5. Like, okay, yeah, so it's the first month.
That's in the first month.
Yeah, so normally when you get in, you're in, right? So this one, you get in, it's quasi
in
only.
You're still not in yet. All right.
And I like that. That's going to really drive these 20, you know, teams, right, to run as fast as possible to make progress. So
okay.
I like this competitive element. It's fantastic.
We'll talk about what's next 2017 after
the break. Yeah, but
I'm
one more thing about
Karam,
Sunway.
I'm here with Karamjit Singh and Anusha Kandasivan from Digital News Asia. You're listening to Tech Talk BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Enterprise. It's Tech Thursday. Karamjit Singh and Anusha Kandasivan from Digital News Asia here with me. Of course, you guys just organized What's Next 2017, and that happened last week, and a whole bunch of stuff came out from there. But let's start with the Malaysia Reimagined panel session. Give us the breakdown, Anu.
That was a really lively session. It was the first one. We had Accenture Malaysia Country MD Azwan Baharuddin, Sime Darby Group Procurement Head Adi Wira, PKT Logistics CEO Michael Teo, and Magic CEO Ashran Ghazi. And your Kusu Chuang was the provocateur.
You let him in, huh? Okay.
Yeah, you did.
Kusi Chuang, yeah.
You should have heard Karam wax lyrical about his abilities as a provocateur.
Okay.
In love. Okay. Anyway, so the panel basically we talked about how digital technology allows you to reimagine how your company and how the country can operate. So everybody's been talking about digitalization and we must transform and all of that. So it's about sustainability, definitely, but the panel warned that digitalization for its own sake is dangerous and it should be avoided.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically, I think it was Ashran who said that when you're going through this process, the conversation should not start with "Let's do something digital and you know and try and figure it out." But what is what you should do is say, "Let's do something that improves the bottom line."
Yeah.
If that tool happens to be something digital, then that's really great.
Yeah. I mean, so what's the business outcome at the end of the day, right? I mean, I guess that's the question. Yeah. And then after that, you know, will technology will usually be the enabler?
Yeah.
Right.
So Adiwira had he had an interesting perspective because he's from Sime Dami Group and, you know, a very traditional company, 100-year-old industry and all of that. And what they have to do, because they're a public company, they have to deal with boards and their shareholders. And they basically are answerable to their shareholders. So they can't just, you know, throw money at things and they have to justify themselves. But he said, so he said that a board that understands what you're doing with digital is very important. At the same time, you should be, while you're answerable to your board, you must be able to justify what you're doing. And if you fail at something, let's say a company like Sime Dami wants to work with a startup and say, you know, they have this technology that we really need and then somehow it doesn't work. Mm. They have to justify their failure and say, look, we did everything right, but it just didn't work out. Mm. We have to move on and learn from our mistakes. So you can't, like, get gun-shy and just stop. Mm. Yeah. So, yeah, that's basically it. And another important point they brought up was top-down leadership is extremely important.
Mm.
Yeah. So, PKT's Michael Teo. Mm.
Cool guy, yeah?
Yeah. Michael Teo, yes,
yeah.
He is.
So, that is it's a family-run company, also very, very old, right? And what they did was...
Not that old, but...
yeah, okay, not as old as Sime Dami, but yeah, okay. Yes, but, you know, but it's a traditional family-run business. And what they did was... Instead of banning social media at work, where, you know, employees say you can't use Facebook, they make their employees use only Facebook. Yeah. So all their communication and everything is through Facebook. And he said that makes communication so much faster, so much more efficient, and everybody knows everyone. And he has access to all his employees, and all the employees have access to him. He said something pretty interesting, which I don't think I put in the article, which was when he first implemented this policy, his elders were saying, "Are you crazy? Why are you doing this? First of all, it's Facebook. People be wasting their time. And then how can you, as the CEO, as the big leader, go and talk to the administration person and talk to the cleaner?" You know, there should be some separation here. It's a very, very traditional way of thinking. Right. But he said, look, they are still my employees. I still need to know what they think, right? That's how the company would be successful and grow better, because I need input from everybody. And he just insisted on doing it. And he did it and it works.
Right. Because I don't like, I know Dr. Michael Teo, and one of the things was that, so he says that when he sends email, nobody reads it. But when he puts something on Facebook, everybody reads it.
Yes,
right? So
exactly.
That seems to be a better way of communicating. If you actually go to his office, he's got this huge screen, right, which is Facebook, and he's got all the different groups in his Facebook group. So he's actually basically communicating all the time. By Facebook, right? And he's working.
Correct. Yeah. I visited him in his office before the conference just for a chat. Yeah.
It's
amazing. Very inspirational, and more CEOs should visit. And you know, he's got this incredible passion and fire in him to mentor, right?
Mm.
And he takes CEOs on two mentor
trips
a year, you know, for each one is for like what 8 days or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And where when you have to send him a video as to why you want to be in this trip, and it's a mentor plus, you know, an industry learning trip. And you know, when you're in this
trips.
So you're actually drive in a convoy, and he said that actually compels you to improve teamwork. So just a fascinating guy. I'm glad through this conference he has come into my radar, and you know, me into him, and we want to definitely, you know, work together more,
right?
Because it's inspiring to other Malaysians
and
too.
So sticking with the What's Next 2017 conference, the session on the business impact of disruptive technology saw Michael Fung, the Group Chief Strategy and Transformation Officer of Maybank Group, saying he can't sleep at night.
So this was interesting because I was frankly a little bit worried, because you're in the largest bank in the country and one of the largest in the region, and you know, would he be honest about the challenges they're facing, about what they're doing also? And he was totally right. For him to say that what keeps him up at night is, you know, the big global players, you know, who've got technology, they've got the reach, and they've got the data, because then you can, so even on Gmail, and I didn't know this, you know, he said on Gmail even you can enable payments, you know, from one Gmail user to another. Mm. And of course, WeChat already has WhatsApp, or is already now working on that in India, right? And you know, and they could do it anytime they want, but the big global guys don't like to be regulated. So of course, once you want to start, you know, moving money around, regulations will come in. So that's the only thing that is maybe holding them back. Plus, you know, you've got enough countries. India is already a big market that will keep you occupied for a long time trying to get it right. And to just launching it isn't enough, right? You want to then make sure you iterate and improve on the product to make sure you win. You don't just want to have a product in the market. So a lot of things to do before probably, you know, little Malaysia is in their radar. But, you know, he's saying, look, we're aware. And I was most impressed that he said, look, you know, we now, maybe in the old days, I was telling him that, you know, a lot of banks, and let me just pause to make sure that there is a comma in my sentence there. So he said, there are, you know, a lot of banks now are launching innovative things, right? When I was at, I think, was it on this show that I mentioned? I was at a panel session, and then a bank, and then before the panel session, they were excited and say, oh, you know, we're launching this product today or next week, and where, you know, consumers just use their app and they can do everything on the app and they can get approval for whatever it is they're doing too. Mm. And home loan application and stuff like that. So right. I said, isn't now the competition becoming among banks because banks are moving so fast? He said, no. Yeah. He said, our competition still is, you know, with startups. You know, if a startup is launching something that fast, that becomes by de facto almost the new normal for customer expectations.
Right. With the fintechs.
So very high bar, he said.
I was at a conference yesterday on analytics innovation, and it was there was this Dr. Farooq, who was formerly a chief data scientist, formerly from ADAX. Mm. And so, he said that, you know, businesses that if you are providing an intermediary role in your business, be worried, you know, so that kind of thing. Like if you're thinking about taxis, you think if you're, you know, so that's where there's possibility of disruption when you're just providing intermediary with telcos, thing, you know.
They are adapting. So he brought up, you know, that, and I was quite impressed. I say, wow, that's a high bar. And then, you know, Dato Hassan from Takaful was saying that, you know, the older staff, which is the, you know, baby boomers like me, right? And the Gen X maybe, is that they maybe have a problem understanding the importance of you know, digital innovation and the consequence of disruption. And then Michael said, you know, and I asked Michael, is that a problem, a challenge with Maybank too? He said in Maybank they value experience, but they also have programs to help, you know, this group of people get up to speed with what's going on out there.
Right.
So tackling issues like, and I think one interesting he mentioned is look through our Maybank app. And one thing I think your listeners would know or may not know, when Maybank, they were the first to launch internet banking in year 2000.
Yep.
It took them about 2 years to hit 3 million users, subscribers.
Have my view on that. I think there were only how many that were allowed, because it was the case of the local banks allowed to do internet banking first.
Local banks maybe allowed first,
First, before foreign banks. So it was by default that you would get 3 million anyway.
Or 2 million, but you have to be a customer. 2 million. So maybe the competition then maybe was among them. And you know, you can't blame the central bank for wanting to give its own players a leg up, right? Because if you're competing with Citibank or HSBC, these are global mature economies, so it's not a level playing field in that sense. So that's just the counter to that, you know. Okay. Whether you accept it or not, that's fine, it doesn't matter to me, but I'm just saying that from the regulator's point of view. So so when they launched their mobile app, which was like 4 years ago, 2011 or whatever. Oh my goodness, that's not 4 years ago. That's like 6 years ago, right? Wow. Or 2010. Guess how long it took them to reach 2 million users?
How long?
Oh, sorry. So someone in the audience said 2 weeks. I said, okay, man, I don't know what you're smoking, but my career. No, it was 2 months, right? Not that. And it's a young guy, right? Imagine the young people's, you know, perception, how they speed,
forever.
Right? Yeah, 2 weeks is forever. So it took them only 2 months. So that shows how fast things are moving. And, and you know, in that app, he said that you can actually apply for a credit card, you know, only through the app, you know, without giving any documentation, just scan and send over. And another thing you could do through the app too, which I forgot. And then I asked the audience spontaneously, how many of you are using Maybank to customers? And surprisingly, more than half the crowd, I was really shocked at that. And then I said, how many of you know of these features in the app? And all the hands went down except like three. Mm. And Michael said, yeah, I know that's the frustration because we're doing a lot of things and the message is not there out there yet that, you know, we're doing some things which are actually at the leading edge or we are on par with a lot of things that are happening.
That's because, you know, they should advertise a little bit more in BFM.
Maybe, la. I mean, not more, la. Only totally exclusively. And then they get the whole country. Don't ask me how, although you only listen here because of the podcast.
Okay. Another session.
Pause now.
Was the adapt to disruption now or suffer a slow death? Yeah. Obviously, a Karam's kind of clickbait title.
Oh my God, clickbait.
Clickbait. That saw Takaful Malaysia Berhad Group CEO Mohamad Hassan Kamil talking about the aggressive digital journey. So Anu, I want to hear you.
Yes. Okay, so he said that...
I get the hint.
Takaful Malaysia is the first company to aggressively embark on selling insurance online in Malaysia. So it was kind of... They had to do it because... They came to a point where they were forced to let go of all their agents. Mm-hmm. So insurance is sold to you by three agents, right? They, because of rising costs, they just couldn't sustain it. They had to let go of all the agents, which meant they were forced to rethink their business model. And the obvious choice was to go online. Mm. So they were forced to do this, but they ran with it. They took advantage of it. And so he talked about the different things that you have to think about when a big company like this goes online. The one important thing, one of the first things you must think about is you have to realize that a big company which is not, was not born online, you need help. Mm. You need to partner with people who have the knowledge and skill to get you online and, you know, do things like social media marketing, for example, things that and change your core software, basically.
Right.
Yeah, so that helped them. They launched their first product online within 6 months.
Mm.
Yeah. And then within 3 months of launching it, they sold about 40 million policies.
Hmm.
Yeah, but this was motor insurance. Right. So everybody has to get motor insurance. So they had a ready market there. Hmm. So that really helped them out. And then another thing is that you must take advantage of the surrounding industry's digitalization as well. So look at things, people you can partner with, look at things you can leverage on. One big help for them was because they went online, so people had to fill in forms themselves, right? You know, you have to put in your car number, you have to put in your whatever number and this and that, and nobody knows these kind of details and where to find them. But there was... At that point in time, they were very lucky, actually. These people came up, there was a database. I can't find the name right now.
Mm. Not 42 million, that's strong.
So there was a database where people were putting up everybody's motor vehicle details into an online database. So they linked to that. So basically, when you go in and you put in your name and your IC number and you click something... And all your motor vehicle details
just
come
there,
out. Yeah. So you don't have to go and look for all these details and get frustrated.
Including the summons you haven't paid.
Yeah, of course.
Mm. Sensitive topic.
And then
sensitive topic.
As time goes on, in a few years, they also help you link to it. Besides, you're buying motor insurance, they help you link to road tax, which is MyEG, and then, you know, all other kinds of things, pay your summons, things like that. So take advantage of all these things going on around you to make your customer have a better experience, which... then translates eventually to them wanting to come back to you.
Yeah. I mean, there's got to be a reason. It's got to be useful to me to want to come back, right?
Exactly, yeah.
All right, and we'll continue our conversation with Karamjit Singh and Anusha Kandasivam from Digital News Asia. This is Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9.
It's still Tech Thursday on Enterprise. Karamjit Singh and Anusha Kandasivam from Digital News Asia here with me, Frida Liu. Of course, we're talking about the tech ecosystem. And just yesterday, the BET Asia 2017 took place. And the Education Minister, Mazir Khalid, was on stage. How was it, Anu?
It was interesting. So BET Asia, it's actually a global trade show for education technology. So the education minister was there. And the theme of this year's conference is cultivating global collaboration in education. So the minister said that this is completely consistent with the ministry's objective of gaining more innovative and less traditional ways of teaching and learning through collaboration.
Mm.
So he asked a question, which is, now, we're all talking about the fourth industrial revolution. We can't run away from that. As the Industry 4.0 unfolds, how do we prepare our children for their future? Obviously, through education. Mm. But is our education system right now enough? Does it suffice? So he said in the 70s, our education system is basically a legacy from the 70s. The system plays very heavy emphasis on values of social cohesion, producing disciplined, hardworking workers who could contribute to the rapid economic growth of the country. Right now, we are still growing, right?
Right.
We're still rapidly growing. But he said we have to widen the focus of the education system beyond...
Can't be stuck in the 70s.
Beyond examinations, beyond discipline. We have to reconceptualize teaching and learning to maximize positive social transformation and innovation.
Mm.
So we've all heard this before, actually.
Right.
Yeah. So what he was saying was that... using digital tools is one thing, and other people in the conference also said this. Using digital tools in the digital economy is great because, you know, that's the new way forward. But it doesn't promote understanding of... It may not promote understanding of what you're actually learning. You're still exam-oriented.
Mm.
So he has said that has to change.
Mm.
And he did... mention a few collaborations that the ministry is doing with MDEC, with the British Council, for children to, you know, competitions and programs for school children where they are trying to promote not just STEM subjects and TVET, which is, you know what that is, right?
Yes,
I have it here.
Technology.
Technical and vocational education and training.
TVET, yes.
Which is, he said, those things are key drivers of economic growth.
Yeah.
So not just promoting that education, but also making sure that children are really understanding. So the programs are designed to make sure that the children are actually understanding what they are learning.
Mm-hmm.
For example, one interesting one he mentioned was called School Lab.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically a competition of science communication.
Mm.
So it tests how children can communicate what they've learned in science through experiments, you know, through videos, things like that, which is pretty interesting. And yeah.
Okay. Talent Corp forms Talent Compact 4.0. So we talk about the gaming conference first. There is a Level Up KL, right, which happened last week. Right, quick mention of this, quick.
Yes, quick. So, yes, this was run by MDEC, you know, and you had over 700 attendees, developers, publishers, and academicians. And the third year now, it's already among the largest game development conferences in the region. So what I liked about this, and Jin was there, and there's a cool video at the end of the article too, which you should watch, because Jin put in a lot of time into that. So they're already now exploring cross-border alliances with regional associations. That's important because you can expose people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they've signed a number of collaborations with game associate and partners from Japan, Taiwan, Philippines, Indonesia. So again, the hope is that these countries and the groups of, you know, academicians who are in the game development space, you know, publishers and independent game developers will work together now closely, right?
Mm-hmm.
To drive greater content creation and then, you know, talent development, ecosystem funding and also outreach. So it's kind of cool. Another thing they did was they launched an incubator. Interesting. Sunway's launched its incubator, Accelerator. Mm-hmm. This is an incubator space for, of course, incubators means you're aspiring game developers, indie developers and small to medium startups. So that's kind of interesting. And they partnered with UOA Group, which is great. So a big established, you know, a property player says, you know, we see value in supporting this. So we give you some space somewhere central. So that's going to be good. And then they've got partners like Google Inn and Sony Interactive and Unity Technologies. But Sony is interesting because it was a big announcement because they said that, and their head of product management said that they're going to, because they see the high potential in Malaysia, they're going to provide this Level Up Inc., which is the incubator, with PlayStation 4 development kits, right? So that our Malaysian developers can create more games using Sony's, based on Sony's home console.
Okay,
so very good stuff.
All right.
Good job by MDEC and, you know, Hasnol there.
All right, we're moving back to the Talent Corp story. They form Talent Corp Compact 4.0, and the panel chaired by Idris Jala brings together 10 experts representing Malaysia's key and emerging industries. And you have something to say about the composition of this panel.
So because as a Malaysian and you are, you know, as a parent, then all of us, you know, education is important to be future ready. It's always been important, right?
Right.
So, and then also then as employers, you want this kind of quality workforce to come through. So look at what they say, right? It is bringing together 10 experts representing Malaysia's key and emerging industries. So you serve as an independent advisory board. So representing, you know, our key and emerging industries. And then you move down to the composition. It's, because in DNA, because we write for global audience, we don't put the titles, but this is Tan Sri Rebecca Fatima, right?
Right.
Former Secretary General.
Yeah.
Of Ministry of Trade. She did a great job there, but former Secretary General, and I move back up to the thing where they say, experts representing Malaysia's key and emerging industries. So she's the former Secretary General. Then you've got, I think, Tan Sri Zarina Anwar, also former chairman of the Securities Commission. Mm-hmm. Again, now look at what they say up there versus this. Then you've got, so these two, to me, are in the same mindset, same background, same thinking they'll probably bring to the table. So I think it's a duplicate here. Then you've got another duplicate. You've got Tengku Zafrul, the group CEO of CIMB. How dare I say the group CEO of CIMB? Do I question whether he should be on the board? No, I'm saying, look, you've got him there. Then you've got Nora Abdul Manaf, Group Chief Human Capital Officer of Maybank.
Right.
You've got two people from the banking background. You don't need two. I think only one is enough. And then you've got Mark Rosario, CEO of GE Malaysia. Mm-hmm. And you've got Mark, of course, Dato. And then you've got Dato Prakash Chandran, President and CEO of Siemens Malaysia. Again, both of these are multinationals and they play very strongly in the power automation game. Right. You've got two of them there. You know, Yasmin is great to be there. Alban Muti from DG is great. Then you've got Chong Chai Neom, MD of IBM Malaysia, and Sajid Sivanandan from Google. Again, two technology companies where I think you only need one.
Okay, so
you duplicate. Yes, you look at that. I think the composition of this panel can be a lot better if you want to serve the needs of us, our future needs, Malaysians.
Right.
I'm disappointed with the composition of this panel.
Five people too many.
Yeah, not five people too many. Duplicate, yeah. There should be different people. And, you know, the biggest jaw dropper is that, you know, nobody, you're talking about the future of work in Malaysia, nobody here is under 45, although Yasmin may be just 46, I think. Yeah, she just crossed it. But, you know, nobody here is below 45. Where are the young people in this group? And, you know, there's some names I can throw out, like Michael Teo, you know, who is a global advisor for Microsoft. Also, he works with, you know, millennials and Gen Zs, right? XYZ. Yeah. So, you know, he lives, breathes and sleeps this space. He would be an ideal person to be there. You've got people like Suresh Tiru from Job Street. They've been working with talent since 1990s, right? He's a regional perspective. And someone like him would be great on this panel. I haven't
spoken to them.
So right. there are a lot of very, very good people who could be in here, but they're not. And I'm puzzled. And, you know, when you throw names out like that, it'd be great to show, you know, why we think they suit in there. Because right now, I think this, as a Malaysian, this doesn't serve my needs of the vision you're talking about, right, for Talent 4.0, right? You say it complements, you know, other initiatives that are coming up and they'll help, you know, with recommendations that'll be relevant.
Yeah.
I have my doubts with the current composition.
Or even a
sorry, a, don't or, mean to offend
right,
everyone.
Or even a startup representation.
Of course, startup. Of course, you've got you got some names there, and then you know Suresh Tiru. Of course, you know joined Job Street way long ago, so he's been an entrepreneur himself. Okay. Now a professional manager,
okay.
But you know
that's
my say on
that's
that.
That's your say, la. And
annoy
day,
a whole bunch of people there, la.
Singles Day is over, right? 11/11, and Alibaba recorded another historic day. Its sales numbers, 25 billion, right? And over here in Malaysia, Lazada kicked off their month-long online revolution campaign with sales record also on that day.
It hit 100 million in that day, gross merchandise value. So gross merchandise value just means that if you're selling a BFM t-shirt and the t-shirt is 15 ringgit, you know, they get a small take on that, but they say 15 ringgit is, you know, the revenue that they got. But in the end, most of it goes back to BFM because it's your t-shirt, right? So they get a small take. But in the world of e-commerce, they use this GMV, gross merchandise value. That's what it means. Anyway, you know, of course, Hans Peter, you know, is really ecstatic about it. You know, it shows that the growing trust and relevance of e-commerce in Malaysia. But I want to look at some of the data points, which is interesting. They had their website and app, the Lazada Malaysia, had 10 million visits in the single day, three times more than last year's 11/11. Interesting.
Wow.
And then, yeah, three times more. And then at the peak, there were 1,400 transactions per minute. So people actually transacting, you know, putting in their credit card details or debit cards, buying stuff.
And we say the economy is troubled, huh?
Yeah, correct. Shopping. I think, but on days like this, some of the discounts deals were just jaw-dropping, right? Yeah. So you forget about the financial discipline, say, hey, I'm going to get this. So, and the top merchants on Lazada sold more than 50 times the normal day's volume. So the categories that were interesting were groceries. You know, interesting. Mm. People buying groceries online. That was a shocker to me. Mm. Okay, baby toys and then third was electronics.
Right.
So and kudos to Petronas fuel cards. You know, they were the single highest, you know, selling products. Petronas fuel cards. I think those cards are probably stuck at 185 per liter. That's why. And then you got Milo, 2.2 kg, right? Long live Nestle and Milo.
I'm glad I wasn't online that day.
Oh, you were? I was going to ask you.
I wasn't online that day. I knew, you know, they would just be asking for trouble. Yeah, so
I had a friend who said she spent about 5-6 hours just buying stuff.
Well, I was online, but I wasn't on any shopping thingy. I would have gotten myself in trouble.
Really, yeah? So, and then just quickly, just one interesting. Purchases range from as small as those who bought Tiger Biscuits. You know, 81 cents. Yeah.
Otherwise, it's 120.
I don't know, but yeah. a 75-inch, you know, Samsung UHD TV set, which was 13,500 ringgit. Wow. Someone paid that much online to buy this TV set, man. Phenomenal.
To get a good deal. So you didn't shop either?
I didn't, but I suddenly had a package from Lazada, and I saw it's from a manufacturer in China, you know, in my mailbox. I was shocked at this. I say, what's my wife doing, man? I don't know whether she shopped on that day, but I think my son got a T-shirt he liked. You know, he says it's very cool or whatever. But disappointingly, it's way too small, so his younger brother is enjoying it now. So I say, you're not sending it back. No reverse logistics here. You deserve it.
Right.
So be warned, because these merchants out of China, I think their measurements and all may not be... You know,
China sizes are very small.
Yeah, China sized him down. He's a you know Punjabi boy based in Malaysia eating chapati, nasi lemak, all char kway teow.
All right. That's all the time we have for Karmjit Singh and Anusha Kandasivan from Digital News Asia. You've been listening to Enterprise on BFM 89.9.
This is how low U Mobile's roaming rates are.
Do re mi fa sol la ti lo.
A little lower?
Do re mi fa sol la ti lo.
Nope, lower.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.